Welcome to Marketing for the Sales Guy, a podcast that aims to share marketing ideas that salespeople can use, but also hopefully will be relevant to B2B marketers that want to see sales results from their marketing efforts. This week's episode focuses on a couple of sales articles that I read. One was by Anthony Inarino, the sales blog. That was about the notion of revealing price at the end of your sales pitch. And the second article was one from the Harvard Business Review, 3 ways to motivate your sales without stressing your sales team out. Just on the first article, it's a kind of interesting one. I was always taught when I was started out in sales to reveal the price at the end and to avoid conversations about price at all costs until you've established the value. And that was very much the mainstay of a lot of sales training programs. But as Anthony discusses, it does give the impression that you're hiding something. I think we've maybe all been in a scenario where the customer or prospect has asked at the outset what the price is, and we've kind of come up with excuses and said, well, we'll come to that later. Maybe I will outline a little bit about services before we discuss the price. And it always sounds like you're hiding something. So he makes that point that it is a negative thing when you're hiding something. He also made another interesting point that if you do leave it to the end of the conversation or the end of the presentation, by the time your customer hears the price, you've actually got less time to explain the benefits and why they should be paying that price. So you're under a lot of pressure to differentiate, and you maybe don't have the time to actually elaborate on why your product or service is worth that amount of money. So he makes the interesting suggestion that maybe you should start out by discussing the price, or at least mentioning the price up front. And then you have the whole of the meeting, whether it's 20 or 30 minutes, to kind of substantiate that price or build up the value so that people can see what they're getting for their money. So, and he also makes the point that, you know, maybe you shouldn't be afraid of the price, and make the point that, you know, everyone has lower cost competitors, so, you know, price is always going to be an issue. But maybe the message you should be conveying in that conversation is that you know, people prefer to work with you for the values or the outcomes you produce. So, you know, the price is just one component part of that. The most important part and the reason people choose to work with you is the outcomes that you produce. So I thought that was kind of interesting. It is, I do think, as well as giving the impression that you're hiding something, it also always sounds very contrived to me when you come up with different excuses for not giving the price when you're asked. So it's, you're made to look a little bit manipulative if you've come up with lots of canned responses as to, yes, I'll discuss price at the end once we've outlined the key benefits. So you already start to look like a manipulative salesperson. So I think that's a negative. So I think that's a good point to make. Also, I think in everyday life, everybody wants to know what the price is, so you shouldn't avoid it. I can think of lots of scenarios myself where I want to know what the price is or the price range before I start the conversation. Doesn't mean I'm definitely not going to buy, but I do need to know. And you can think of lots of scenarios where you go into a shop and if the prices aren't on display, it's slightly annoying. You want to know, you know, the price range. So I think that's kind of an interesting point that he makes. I also, the other point that I thought was of interest is that I also state the price up front, or possibly the price range, or what my minimum pricing is, just as a way of qualifying prospects. And that might be not suitable for everyone, but I find I don't really want to be wasting my time, which is a very premium resource for me these days, when the prospect doesn't have the budget or is nowhere near the budget for what you're offering. So I think it's quite a useful qualifying mechanism at the start of a conversation to talk about minimum pricing or a price range if you're asked. So, yeah, that is something I think is interesting, and just the whole notion that you shouldn't be scared of the price, and if it comes up early, whether you want to mention it early or mention it at the end is entirely up to you, but if it is mentioned early or the prospect asks you, I don't think you should be afraid of the price. I think you should say quite clearly what it is rather than appearing to have something to hide. So I thought that was interesting. The second article was more about motivating sales team, and it was really about the notion that traditional sales again is talking about numbers. It's already a high anxiety kind of position. It's a high pressure position, any position in sales, because you have quotas, and the traditional response when you get near to the end of a quota or a time period where your sales figures are not stacking up is for the sales manager to apply a little bit more pressure. And being a Harvard article, of course, they go into some depth on that and use a lot of graphs. There was one quite interesting graphic that was used called the Yerkes-Dodson law, which I'd never heard of, which was really an anxiety performance curve, and it just showed a bell-shaped curve indicating that you add stress points at the beginning and it makes very little difference to salespeople. You add a little bit more pressure. And that does improve performance because everybody needs a little bit of a G up, a little bit of a kick. So you add a little bit of pressure to your salespeople and that gets them performing. But then the other part of the bell curve is where you add too much pressure and then performance kind of evaporates. So there is this kind of sweet spot in terms of applying pressure and some degree of anxiety being a good thing for salespeople because it produces action. And it produces kind of urgent action. So I thought that was kind of interesting. So in the article, they talk about three areas where you could motivate your sales team. One was to create exceptional sales experience, and they talk about creating value or having a strategy and providing insights for your clients so that you are really providing value to your clients. The second point that they make is to match the sales process to the clients, not your own, so that just because you need something to close this quarter or today, you shouldn't be really looking at your own sales process and your own closing dates. You should really be working with the clients and working with their process and what they need to get the deal through and their timelines. And the third point they make is that most sales opportunities today are quite often complex sales because we have an enormous amount of technology involved and the client has maybe done a lot of work themselves on research. So they make the point that it's actually, every sales situation is quite unique now. So it's not just training that's needed from management, it's real life experience coaching. So I thought those were kind of three interesting kind of solutions to this idea of motivating sales team. My response to the first point about creating exceptional sales experiences, yeah, I mean, I think everybody's trying to do that, and that's what everybody should be doing. I think more often than not, as well, on this point, it should be a case of, in addition to creating exceptional value for your clients and insights, I think you have to make it easy for them as well. And this is something I've been guilty of, is that sometimes you wait for clients to ask you lots of questions where maybe you should anticipate some of those questions and help your client answer them and just make the whole sales process as simple as possible so they don't have to come back to you with 10 or so emails. You know what some of the questions they're going to ask are, so maybe you should address them up front rather than waiting for them to come back to you and ask the obvious questions. And just make the process as easy and simple as possible on their end so that they don't find the process laborious. And even if they are genuinely interested to work with you, it's like pulling teeth or blood from a stone when they're trying to get information from you. And you've made the process complicated or you've made it overly long. Just try and simplify it so that the client doesn't mind engaging with you and getting in contact with you. It's seen as something that goes quite smoothly. And as to matching their sales process, that's easier said than done. Most clients don't really share what their process is. So I think you're quite often far better off finding out what the implementation date is for them in terms of when they really need to get this started, and working back from that date and helping them by saying what you need by certain dates for them to get this started on time, and really find out how you can help them in terms of if they need approvals, what information can you provide to help them get those approvals, and just work back from their preferred starting date and try and push them along using their sales process, not the times that you would like to convert them. The final point, which is really about training versus coaching, and the fact that every sales situation is unique, so maybe it's more a case of coaching being required rather than training. And this is interesting because, you know, a bit of a self-service here, that this is the training I am trying to advocate, is very much a case of actionable training, so that once you have learnt some certain skills, that you have the trainer still involved to help make sure that those tools are used in real life situations, and also that the trainer has some skin in the game as well, so that it's in their interest for the people that they've trained to be using those skills and getting results. But also really about getting feedback to the trainers as well, so that they can tailor make the next training program. So this is something I am advocating that companies think about. It's something I call actionable training, and the idea is that you learn some specific skills, but the trainer stays involved in that process, whether it's a weekly call or a monthly call, and discusses with the people that they've been doing the training with how it's gone, how they've managed to implement some of the skills that you've taught in the training, but also manage that process a little bit and talk them through specific real life situations, and get them to tell you how they've been able to implement or how they haven't been able to implement what you've taught them, and you manage that a little bit and go through real life scenarios with them and help them implement it on their next call or the next meeting. So I call this actionable training because it is a combination of sales training and sales coaching, and it's something I'm advocating as a worthwhile service for companies to really think about. So thanks for listening in. If you want to listen to other podcasts or read blogs on similar topics, do visit us at marketingforthesalesguy.com. Until next week, bye-bye. Thank you.